welcome back. We continue on this Monday night with Mitchell Henderson. The latest from Ukraine is that Bakhmut is now 75% controlled by the musicians and the Russian military. They're slowly grinding up the rest of the meat there. And I'm putting a picture up fairly soon on the homepage of one of the Ukrainian soldiers. He's got at least 65, maybe 70, and he's passing along a round of some mortar round to another soldier, and it's just sickening what Zelensky has done to those people over there. 10 million have fled the country. Maybe 400,000 are dead now, dead, and 99.99997% are all Christians. This is a war on the Goyim. And no question in my mind, this is all being done with intention so that the Russian military will carry on and the Ukrainian military won't rise up against Zelensky. There won't be any left. I don't know. It's all ugly. Hello, Mitchell. Welcome back.
Hello. Good to be back.
Yeah. Glad to have you on board, as always. Go ahead.
I want to talk a little bit more tonight about a war that Russia is definitely winning. It's winning right now. Okay, it's something that we as American citizens need to pay attention to this because it has a lot to do with what's going to come in the next few months. Okay, hurt us personally. Okay. So what this is the global sanctions war. So a couple weeks ago, I talked about the sanctions war, which for Russia is the most important theater of war because it is turning the sanctions weapon back onto America and Europe. And this is great because it's Europe and America that began the sanctions war that is going to kill us. Okay. On April 5th, 2023, Tucker Carlson even led by discussing the sanction war and the looming hyperinflation as a result. This is all mainstream media now. Okay. I mean, we've been talking about it, but now the mainstream media is picking up on it because it's so obvious. Okay. So while America turned in the past 50 years to a service economy, Russia, in fact, has the largest resource economy in the world. That means what Russia has to sell is resources, important resources that everybody needs. Okay. While China produces a lot of consumer goods, okay, they have to get their resources from somewhere, and Russia is it. Okay. So the America's economy is based on fiat money and fiat goods, which are services. Russia is moving to a gold standard for the ruble and is interested in actual goods.
The Chinese are moving for the yuan, and we're going to be SOL with currency that's not even worth burning. The joke. Go ahead.
Right. Gee. Well, actually, the BRICS country, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, and South Africa are all have been buying up gold for the past 10 years. They're stocking up on it.
Not us.
Yeah, no. So why have sanctions backfired on the USA and NATO? An article in the Daily Caller by Antonini and Ogre detailed what a reserve currency must be. And I'm just quoting them here, okay? A critical feature of reserve currency is its apolitical nature, which Biden is now gutting because he's using sanctions on everybody for everything. If you pass a gay law, they sanction you. If you invade a country, they sanction you. If you buy something from Russia, some military arms from Russia, they sanction you. People are getting tired of it. After both parties in Washington destroyed the dollar's stability with inflation, now the Biden administration has decided to wield the dollar as a weapon. Together, the message to foreigners is that they should get out while they still can. In response to Russia's war with Ukraine, the U.S. froze the dollar reserves of Russia's central bank. To be clear, these were not American assets, but were dollars owned by the Russian central bank and the Russian people. Okay, so we sanctioned individual Russian people. We stole their money from them. Okay, they got to love us for that. The seizure was intended to cause bank runs and collapse Russia's credit system. It did not work. Instead, it exposed the Biden administration's willingness to violate the trillions of dollars of foreigners rightly own. The danger of this precedent is difficult to overstate. Foreign nations have begun to dump dollars because it's no longer a reliable store of value. Suddenly, it was a political weapon wielded at will against anyone who held it. The de-dollarization that began a year ago is happening faster than anybody expected. End quote.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay, so that was somebody else talking there, but I agree with everything they said. It's correct. Okay. So the USA uses dollar reserves to interfere in the internal affairs of other nations. For example, Anthony Blinken on April 5th sanctioned four Supreme Court judges in Georgia, the nation on Russia's southern border. The nation of Georgia, not the state. Blinken said the four judges abused their position as court chairman on Georgia's High Court of Justice, undermining the rule of law and the people's faith in Georgia's judicial system. The U.S. continues to stand with all Georgians in support of democracy. Okay, I want you to just keep in mind that when our government says democracy, they mean a totalitarian state. It's not democracy, okay? Democracy doesn't mean what we think it means anymore. Okay, so this is rich.
No, it hasn't
State
for
Department.
A long time, Mitch. You're right.
Yeah.
It has not for a long time.
So what Blinken said is rich. The U.S. State Department is micromanaging Georgia's judiciary at a time that the American judicial system is being weaponized against Trump to actually prohibit the 2024 main opposition leader from running against the incumbent government. They can fool Americans, but the rest of the world can see our hypocrisy. There was a time when we condescendingly preached about free and fair elections in El Salvador, at a time the CIA was actively rigging their elections to ensure Christian Democrat electoral victories. America called this democracy in the 1980s. Blinken scolded El Salvador for locking up its MS-13 criminals. These are gangsters, street gangs, criminals, because it violates their human rights to throw them in jail. They can murder people, they can rape, they can rob, and that doesn't violate anybody's human rights, but making them pay for what they do, that is a violation of human rights in the modern Biden-esque democratic consciousness, okay? As if El Salvador was Portland or San Francisco. President Nayib Bukele of El Salvador replied, and I'm quoting, "Imagine if the Trump indictment happened in any other country where a government arrested the main opposition candidate. The United States' ability to use democracy as a foreign policy is gone." Okay. So the president of El Salvador says, we don't know what we're talking about with democracy. We're not democratic. Okay. So, on April 8th, Asian QuickTake published a financial news leader called "The De-Dollarization is Accelerating." Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I'm talking about this, you're going to hear me use the term settlements. And just in case people don't know what that means, it's like when you do trade, you have where I give you the goods, and then we settle up in the cash. Okay. So the settlement just means the payment. Okay. So they pointed out that the current BRICS nations include 40% of the world's population and 25% of world trade. The first step is a transition to making settlements in national currencies. The second step is to offer a new currency to use for trade. This currency will not be a fiat currency like the dollar. It will be backed by metals, including the coin elements of copper, silver, and gold, as well as other precious metals like platinum and the vital rare earth elements. Instead of the petrodollar, the currency will also be tied to petroleum as a value source. The U.S. dollar is worthless. It's based on the good faith of the U.S. government, and nobody has faith in us. They also reported that the ASEAN meeting in February 2023 set as goals for ASEAN nations to reduce reliance on the dollar, euro, pound, and yen for financial transactions and moving towards settlements in local currencies. All ASEAN nations are signing agreements with China to make settlements for trade in yuan and local currencies. ASEAN, taken together, is the world's fifth largest economy. ASEAN members are Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, Burma, Malaysia, Singapore, Brunei, Indonesia, Timor-Leste, and the Philippines. Okay. So it is some of our closest allies are bailing out on the dollar also. Japan, the UK, Canada, Germany, France, and Italy are also challenging the dollar's status. The EU itself is, through the European Central Bank, trying to set up a petro-euro trading mechanism that would no longer anchor to the petrodollar. Switzerland has also joined the de-dollarization trend with over 114 other nations. Israel is accelerating its de-dollarization by selling U.S. Treasury bonds and increasing its yuan reserves. The world is entering a white-hot phase for accelerating pushback against the U.S. economy and dollar hegemony. End quote. Okay. So what danger is this to us, and how can you know? Well, inflation is when you print so much money that you have too many dollars chasing too few goods. This makes the price go up. The cause of inflation is printing too much money. The United States has $2.32 trillion circulating here at home in the United States. $2.32 trillion. A 2.55% increase in our money supply this year has created a nominal 10% inflation, but more like a 20% actual inflation rate. And you can tell that the government stated inflation rate is bogus because you spend your money going to the store and you know it's more than 10%.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So now this is the point where you have to pay attention. There are 2 1/3 quadrillion U.S. dollars circulating outside the United States. If this returns home due to de-dollarization, that will mean 1,000 times more U.S. dollars at home than there are here now. So if you have $1 now, there's $1. If $1 is circulating in the United States, there's $1,000 circulating overseas. If that $1,000 comes back, guess what your dollar is worth? It's worth 1/1,000th of what it was, okay? Mm-hmm. So if a 2.55% increase in money supply brought us 10% inflation, then a 1,000% increase of money supply would bring us 4,000% hyperinflation. So if your dollar was worth $1 in 2020, it is worth 90 cents today. When these dollars come home, your dollar will be worth 1/40th of a cent. 1/40th of a penny. Okay.
Wow.
Chop a penny in 40 pieces. That's what your dollar bill will be worth.
Wow.
So put another way, it would take 4,000 new dollars to have the same spending power as $1 today.
Well, our national, remember, our alleged national debt is $31 trillion, and who do we owe it to? We owe it to
Biden.
The bankers,
yeah,
the Bidens.
Yep. So what's interesting about this, too, is Macron just announced today, he came back, he spent 3 days in China. When he came back, he three major statements that he made is, one, France will not support the U.S. against China in Taiwan, and he is encouraging Europe to not do it, not to support the U.S. in Taiwan. He will work for the de-dollarization of trade, of world trade. And he said the EU must stop taking orders from America. Okay. This is the president of France. They have to stop taking order. Even our closest allies are starting to turn their back on us. Okay. So what hurts us too. Go ahead.
He's one of Soros' boys. He's a Schwabian servant. That's all he is. These are just cutouts. Anyway.
He went into politics, his career, he worked for the Rothschild Bank. That's what he did his whole life.
Right.
He's a Rothschild's boy. Okay, he's their boy. The French hate him. I mean, they're out rioting every day
over
this man. Okay, yeah.
So, and something with his wife, too. What was that about? She had some kind of gender surgery?
Well, his wife is old enough to be his mom, and it's like he wanted a mommy, not a wife. Okay, that was the issue that.
Well, and they got a handler
about.
Too. She's handling it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. So let's put the second part onto that. And we also have to consider the petrodollar. In 1945, Franklin Roosevelt promised King Saud that America would defend Saudi Arabia if Saudi Arabia would accept payments only in dollars. This was the basis for the Saudi Arab American Oil Company, or Saudi Aramco, until the Joe Biden administration seized power in 2021. On that day, Biden publicly announced that he was going to make Saudi Arabia a pariah state. He withdrew air defense systems from Saudi Arabia at a time that Iran-backed Houthi missiles were striking oil production and storage sites. Saudi Arabia has had enough abuse. They said that the deal is off as of 2021. This past week, the head of the CIA, Burns, he went over to Saudi Arabia to tell them that, oh, well, we'll still protect you and stuff. Okay, but let me tell you, if they send the CIA director over, that's not diplomacy, and that doesn't mean anything to them. They would not take the CIA director's word for anything. Mm-hmm. Okay, that would be a crazy thing to do. Nobody takes the enemy spy agency's word for political, you know, solidify anything. It doesn't make a deal.
Right.
Okay, so. So Saudi Arabia said that the petrodollar agreement is now over. Okay, so this went on. Like Russia went ahead and sanctioned oil against the EU since they put a cap on it. And then they said they were going to have to cut additional petroleum production because, well, they're not selling to Europe anymore, so they don't have to produce as much. And they have enough things everywhere. Okay, so let me get into it. Well, no, let me continue on my train of thought, and I'll just come back to it. But so Saudi Aramco bought out U.S. shares after the 1973 Yom Kippur War with Israel. The Saudis did not feel like we were on their side because we were so much on Israel's side. We were ready to go to nuclear war. That was another time that all American people could have possibly died for the sake of the Zionists. Okay, fortunately, it did not happen then. In 2019, they opened up 5% of their shares to the stock market. The U.S. regulators made it very hard for them to do. So this year, China purchased the 5% share. Now China and Saudi Arabia are the only shareholders. That was $100 billion they got from China. This month, Saudi Arabia and OPEC Plus have scaled back petroleum production by 2 million barrels a day. The rest of the world is on the rampage against the United States and Europe. They intend to make us pay so much for gasoline that our economy will break down. Okay. They have the power to do it because why? Because the Biden administration has bullied people so much that Saudi Arabia and Iran have made peace. All the oil companies are now in the BRICS corner. Okay. They're not in America's side. All right. So when I spoke of 5,000% hyperinflation, I was just talking about the monetary aspects of inflation. But shortages of goods also increases inflation. As prices go up, inflation begins to spiral out of control. We are a mirror of Weimar Germany in every aspect. Soon it will cost us $20 billion to mail a letter. We will hurry up and spend our money as soon as we get it because its value will fall so much in a single day that you better spend fast. Because tomorrow the price will be substantially higher. Okay, that's what Weimar Germany was like. Weimar Germany also put LGBT people at the forefront. People could have open sex in bars, open sex on the beach with little kids on the beach and stuff. They had no respect for anybody. So what does the Biden pedophile Biden regime say about Saudi Arabia? John Kirby, national security spokesman, said, Riyadh remains a strategic partner of Washington. Saudi Arabia obviously did not get the memo because Saudi Arabia has stated that it is now uninterested in selling the USA any oil at all. Okay. That is why our CIA director went over there. He probably went over there to tell me he was going to kill him if he didn't do as we told him to do, you know. I don't know that happened, but it could be, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
So for over 88 years, the United States has kept the Middle East in a state of war. We have, in league with Israel, tried to keep them at war and impoverished. What has changed is that since the U.S. was such a jerk to the king of Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia is making peace with Iran, has a ceasefire in Yemen, and is making peace with Assad in Syria and with Turkey as well. Syrian forces are now starting to attack American forces. We are an occupying force in Syria with no mandate from the U.N. We are there illegally, and under international law, we are an illegal invading force. I think we will see the Middle East kick our military out, just like the African nations have kicked out the French.
Uh-huh.
Okay. We made ourselves irrelevant in the region. World War III is, above all, a war of economics and diplomacy, and America has failed. The American people are going to suffer economically and politically because of this Jewish regime's incompetence. Morality is from nature. Jewish morality is man-made. It is situational and contrived. It is not true morality nor true justice. So
you just said it all. It's situational. And
right.
That reminds me of another expression I used to know. Let me see if I can think of it here. Contextual morality. In other words, the morality of any particular issue is related to the context of it. What is it? And whoever is determining the contextual morality of a situation is going to determine it in a way that benefits them. That's what they do.
That's called postmodernism also. Okay.
Good.
And that's the world we live in, and it's a postmodernist world.
You got
it. With this, with Saudi Arabia getting close to China, Ukraine, they were supposed to go talk to Xi, but Ukraine said just yesterday, they said that China's claim to Taiwan is a communist fantasy. That's Ukraine's official statement about China and Taiwan. So, Marco Rubio said in response to this, he said, you know what, why not just let the Europeans worry about Ukraine and we'll worry about Taiwan. And that's not going to happen or anything. It's just an observation he made. Lindsey Graham says the U.S. troops should be stationed in Taiwan. And Biden asked the question, said that U.S. troops will defend Taiwan on the ground. You remember that was a gaffe when he said it before, but when he said it this last time, it was not a gaffe. It's the official policy. So we are majorly picking a war on China. Okay, so let me get into Ukraine. I want to go over the intelligence leak.
75% of Bakhmut is said now to be under Wagner and Russian control.
Right. And keep in mind, Russia's in a big hurry to take it. There's nowhere for them to go.
No.
Take Bakhmut, there's no place for them to go.
They're just disabling and grinding up what's left of the Uk army. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, they're just drawing them into that kill box. So they're going to make a little progress, but they don't have to hurry. There's no time restraint on them. Okay, they have like maybe a full month before they can actually go on the offensive. Okay, because of the mud.
Right.
So the United States has a war plan for assisting Ukraine. Okay, I've talked about this war plan before, and everything I read just says more and more this is the USA plan, the NATO plan. If Ukraine starts to lose too badly, the U.S. and NATO intends to send NATO troops into Ukraine up to the west bank of the Dnieper River. The objective is to make a rump Ukrainian state that can destabilize Russia far into the future. They want Ukraine Ukraine to exist so it can be a constant threat to Russia. There is no American official that wants peace in Ukraine or with Russia. Russia knows all this. Russia has said that it will give no quarter to NATO troops who invade Ukraine. They will attack NATO troops viciously. They've even put bounties if Russian troops or allied Russian or Russian allied troops kill a tank, they get money. They get paid per tank killed. Okay. When they have to do that, they will be officially at war with NATO. Russia is not some poor, illiterate third world country, and they will blow our aircraft out of the air. This is a stupid and short-sighted idea. This is the offensive that Russia is concerned with. They know that Ukraine cannot win, so they are sure that NATO will intervene. So the Russian general staff is, of course, planning for that to happen. They know that NATO troops are already in Ukraine, to include American, Polish, and French troops. Keep in mind that Russia does not listen to the lame lies of the old incestuous pedophile Biden or to the mainstream media. They work on facts, not woke fantasy. Okay? So let me get to this. Remember early on I said, well, you know, Putin has to prepare his people for nuclear war. And there was many things I said he's doing that's to prepare his people. Well, I want you to look at this intelligence leak that we had. That you notice it's a month old already, but just now they're alarmed. They're alarmed that this is vital information that was released. A month ago, okay, and it was in the public domain this whole time. So what is it all about? Well, what it's all about is this is not real intelligence. This is fake intelligence put out by the United States government so they can tell you that, oh, well, the Russians got a hold of our plans and now we're really screwed, because what that intelligence says is Ukraine doesn't have enough anti-aircraft missiles. They don't have enough of this and that. So this is to build an excuse to make us suffer so that we can send more stuff to Ukraine. It's also a cover when Ukraine fails, which is going to fail as soon as the Russian offensive starts. This intelligence leak is to help convince you that we need to send U.S. troops into Ukraine. Okay, this is a Maddox and Turner Joy Gulf of Tonkin incident here. This is all fake, people. It's not real.
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay, yeah. So I know that it's fake by its motive, but also I went and I looked this information up. Well, you know, mm-hmm. Both sides actually have. There's people who've got maps out there that have where the Russian and the Ukrainian units are at. Okay, they're on maps. Okay, like this brigade, this division, that division is in this place or that place. This intel report told the positions of Ukrainian troops. That is public information already.
Yep.
It's already
there
public. There's nothing there they
go.
Said. There's nothing in this intelligence that you cannot find in open source information everywhere. Okay? It's out there. So on two counts, it's fake. It's fake by motive, and it's fake by substance. Okay? I could have made that report. Okay? As a matter of fact, I would be embarrassed to have made that report because it's so shoddy. I swear, the government of the United States is getting so bad at lying. Okay? It's not that I think I've gotten any better at telling the truth.
No, they don't care, Mitch. They don't give a damn. No, they're mocking us. They're just the hell with them. They don't care about us at all. No, it's not our government anyway.
Yeah, it's not our government. So there are U.S. troops stationed near Constanta, Romania. Those troops are to sweep in from the west and south to take the land south of Odessa and the Dniester River on the Black Sea. Okay, this would surround Russian troops in Moldova. They have had to use the Russians will have to use marine infantry, air mobile, airborne troops to stop this American attack. So the first battles with American troops aren't going to be when the NATO troops get to the Dnieper. Those battles will begin the moment that American troops cross the Romanian border. I mean, they know what they're doing. I mean, the military people all think the same. They can know what we're doing because they would do the same thing, okay? The United States wants to get a hold of that land south of Odessa so that Russia won't have it. And Russia's not going to have any of that. They do not want Americans on the Black Sea, okay? So once the Russians get to Odessa, they can sweep down with armored and mechanized units to consolidate that area. But Odessa, so Russia will first take Western Kherson, Mykolaiv, and Odessa provinces because they need to cut Ukraine off from the sea. This is critical because if NATO does invade, they don't want the Ukrainian puppet state that remains to have Black Sea access.
No, they want that. That's got to go. It has to go.
Yes.
It's strategic. It's probably, if it's not the top of their priorities list, it's right there. It's got to happen. They've got to cut them off from sea access. You're right. They can control the grain in the future. They can control everything that way.
Right. And not only that, but see, the Odessa province is right on the border of Moldova, and Moldova has Transnistria, which is a Russian enclave, and Russia wants to unite that enclave with the rest of Russia. So it'll be Transnistria, Odessa, and all that.
I think it's also pronounced Transnistria, but whatever, that's what you're talking about. It's kind of a republic. It's not a certified nation state yet.
No.
It's an unusual kind of a setup, but it's a thin little corridor of land, basically, to the right of Moldova, in between Moldova and Ukraine.
Right. It was a part
and the
of
Russians,
Moldova, but
and the Russians
but
want
the
to make
Russians
that part of Russia.
Did not want to, they didn't want to become part of Moldova, so they broke away, and
right.
Russia sent out peacekeepers. Okay, keep in mind, too, that they have enough
are there Russian peacekeepers
for a year.
Yeah, are there Russian peacekeepers now in Transnistria?
Yeah, they're in Transnistria right now.
I'll be damned. Well, so this is like another Kaliningrad, in a way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and they have, remember, they have all that ammunition for about a year, artillery and small arms ammo, stored in Transnistria. So, as a matter of fact, Ukraine has three divisions on the border with Transnistria to go and try to take that ammunition from them.
Where did that ammunition come from?
That up. Well, that was after the Warsaw Pact broke up. Russia pulled all its ammo and stuff, all the extra military supplies back
out
from
of
the Warsaw
Ukraine.
Pact and, out of Ukraine and Bulgaria, Romania, all the countries. They took
Wow, what a treasure trove. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And see, the Russians know that Ukrainians would like to have that, so that's another reason why they have to make that jet across to Odessa and take all that area.
Ukraine is complaining it's about out of ammunition, so they really want that stuff.
They really want it bad. So the Russians will take the remaining Donetsk and Luhansk provinces, expand in the Zaporizhia province until they have all of it east of the Dnieper River. They will take Chernihiv, Sumy, and Kharkov provinces. They will take Kiev, Poltava, Dnipropetrov provinces east of the Dnieper River. Phase two of the war will be to extinguish Ukraine forever. Before, they were going to divide this up and blah, 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 but now they're like, no. Ukraine has to, they're very bad behaved, and they have to go. Okay, Russia has not blown the bridges over the Dnieper because they will be needing them to finish Ukraine off. I say that because critics of the Russians say if the Russians had any brains at all, they would blow the bridges over the Dnieper River. But you know, if you blow something up, you can't use it either, you know. So
no, they it's like some of the major rail lines are still intact. It's the same basic idea. Well, this is all very interesting.
The Russians are going to need that to move west.
Did you see the 45-mile-long trench that the Russians have built? 45-mile-long trench for trench warfare.
Yeah.
And it's 50 miles behind their front lines.
Mm-hmm.
50 miles behind their front line in western or eastern Ukraine, 50 miles back toward the Donbass, as this 45-mile-long trench they built. That's a fallback in case they need
it. Right. Which Which, listen, if you're a soldier, remember I keep talking about those things that soldiers automatically do. I mean, you never hear about them in war movies or anything. They never talk about it. But one of the things is if you do any military operation at all, you have your objective that you're going to attack. But after the attack, or if something goes wrong, they always have you always establish what you call a rally point back in your rear, so that if things go wrong, everybody can run to the rally point and rally there to defend the oncoming troops, to defend against the oncoming enemy and stuff.
Right.
So Russia's just doing what's prudent to do, okay? So by April a year ago, Zelensky could have saved his nation by negotiating with Russia. Since then, Ukraine has spurned any negotiations with Russia, so Russia will talk if they have to. But more important, they want to not destroy the Zionist state of Ukraine, so they will not have such a vile and evil enemy on its border anymore.
Well, it's like having Bolshevism as a neighbor. They want it eradicated. Then look, this whole thing is not about Nazis and Nazism. This is about Bolshevik communism. Don't get confused by the labels. This is what it's about.
Oh, no, no. You have to realize that, first of all, there are Nazi brigades working in Ukraine. Okay, that is a fact. Second fact is Russian propaganda will call the Ukrainians Nazis. Why?
Yep.
Because the people can have a better memory of
they can
the
relate
Nazis.
To that easier. And
right,
it's, it simplifies the game board.
Right, exactly, exactly. But you know, Russia knows they're really Zionist and stuff. They're completely aware of that. And I think it's I actually call these Ukrainian Nazis Nazis, because Nazi is a derogatory term, and these people are in the service of Zionism. There is no way that they are National Socialists. They should be ashamed of themselves for taking orders from a Zionist Jew. It's just they're not National Socialists. They don't deserve any respect from anybody, anywhere. Okay, they're dirt bags. They're lapdogs of the Zionist pigs. Let's just put it that way. So
they're not it.
In the beginning, I used to see, you know, on social media, there would people like putting up things like, oh, this Nazi battalion and Azov or whatever, and they were like all trying to glorify it and everything. But you know what? They got a lot of bad reactions. Okay, people were putting them down. People were slamming them for what they were doing. Okay, it's like, you know, the Ukrainian government is a woke government. Do we have woke Nazis? Well, I'm sorry, but you know what? We do have woke Nazis. In America, we have them.
Right here.
Yes. As a matter of fact, there's very little difference between an Antifa woke agitator and a National Socialist woke agitators. And by woke, I mean everything about them is very much the same personality of a woke person. Okay. They've taken things to such an extreme that they don't even have a political philosophy anymore. Okay. You know, so I just want to say that when I want to clarify here that I'm talking about these Nazi, so-called Nazi formations in Ukraine. Okay. I'm talking also about their fellow travelers here in America. But 99% of the National Socialists in America would not approve. Okay. They're definitely against
all it. 100% correct. You got it.
Yeah. So don't let a few, you know, even the fact that they're Nazi brigades and stuff is a part of psychological warfare. You know, they wanted to make it an international struggle for freedom. But you know what? International's not buying that. They're just not buying it, you know.
Mm.
Every day I look and I do research, it is becoming so obvious how badly we are losing everything. I watched a speech by Yoweri Museveni today, talking about how
Who?
The United States...
Who?
Yoweri Museveni, he's the president of Uganda in Africa.
Okay, right.
And he was talking about how the Biden administration is going to sanction Uganda because they criminalized LGBT. It's a crime. You can get the death penalty for having sex there. And Museveni was saying, you know, Africa is plagued with AIDS, and the Americans want us to have LGBT sex, which spreads AIDS even further. You know, what are they trying to do to us?
30% minimum, about one-third of all Africans over the age of 12 have HIV, AIDS.
Right.
You never hear about that. It's a fact, though.
No, and there's a reason why.
I should say sub-Saharan Africans, not the Algerians
Africa.
And Moroccans.
Right. Let me explain why that is. Okay, first of all, the United States government created the AIDS virus to kill off Africans. They did this. They did it to kill off black people. They did it because we were exhausted fighting all these little brush fire wars against communism all over the world. And we just said, you know, we don't want to do this in Africa. We just don't want to do it. But so if we kill the Africans off, we don't have to worry about what their politics are. Okay, so what was the calculation? Why did they know that this drug that spreads mostly through homosexual sex, how did they know it would be effective in Africa? Well, they knew this, Jeff, because they understood African culture enough to know that they're very poor countries. And listen, if you're going to have sex, first of all, it might be hard to find a condom. And if you did find one, it'd probably cost too much money. So what have Africans done for birth control traditionally for as long as people have known them? Well, they have sex standing up, and it's anal sex, between a man and a woman, anal sex. And that's how they knew that AIDS would spread all over Africa, is because they knew that about Africans. Now, one thing I noticed, even here in the United States, is the public health people were loath to tell people that the perfect way to get AIDS is through anal sex. As a matter of fact, getting it any other way is difficult. Okay, sexually, it's difficult.
It's a fact.
Anal sex,
which is correct.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect. They didn't even want to tell the American people that because it would make gay people look bad. Okay? I mean, the thing, because millions have to die so that a few gay people don't have to feel bad, in other words. I mean, that's what I'm talking about, the situational ethics and situational morality of these people, is they boil it down to this situation, what's the right thing to do in this situation. Okay? And you're taking that situation, isolating it from everything else, and then making a decision based on that. And it's a wrong decision. Every time it's a wrong decision. It's not based in reality. Okay? The morality of it is just appalling. Okay? So, Museveni, in his speech, he was saying, you know, he said, it was Europeans and it was Americans that came to Africa and exploited this land. They took all our resources. They treated us like dirt, okay? And now they still want to tell us how we should live our lives and what we should do. And he says, and they tried to blackmail us all the time. But you know what? It's time for us to be free. We have our own country, our own culture, our own society. It's time for us to worry about that and not worry about what the United States and Europe says. So that was Museveni in Uganda. And then the same week, the president of Namibia, what used to be Southwest Africa, the German minister, foreign minister, came down and he told them, hey, the German foreign minister was bitching at him about all the Chinese in Namibia. And the president said, well, this is our country. We'll decide who comes here and who doesn't. And besides, we give you free visa. Germans get visa-free travel to Namibia, but Namibians get treated like dirt in Germany, even when they have a diplomatic passport, they get treated like dirt. Yeah. So don't come here preaching to us. We are not a German colony anymore. Well, just to go back, Germany's connection with Namibia is prior to World War I, Namibia was a German colony, as was Tanganyika, so was Togo and the Cameroons. So there was like four major German colonies in Africa at the time. They lost those colonies after World War One, of course. But and what's an interesting thing is people may be familiar with Hermann Göring. He was the head of the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force. Well, his father was the German governor of Namibia. So he lived in Namibia when he was a little kid. Okay.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
That's the German connection with Namibia. But the Namibians are like, yeah, you get out of here. You got no connection with us. Okay. As I look around the world, I see, we just heard the president of El Salvador actually preaching to the United States about how we need to have fair elections and democracy in our country.
Yeah.
Okay, what a change from just 10 years ago. You know, now we have a country where our president calls foreign leaders and they won't pick up the phone. They disrespect him. Everybody disrespects America now. And why do they disrespect us? Because we put LGBT rights ahead of everything else. That's more important than food, more important than medicine, more important than trade, more important than democracy, more important than anything. I mean, it's like we have a gay government, and that's what the government is focused on, is being gay and gayness. Okay, so I fail to see how people, less than 5% of the population is LGBT, but they're running the show now. You know,
it's sad. Mitch. They have so much political and media clout already. I cannot even believe the traction they have. And the irony of it all is, they're suddenly pro-gun. These are the trannies are violent people. This is the message we're getting. This is the message we're getting. They want guns to protect themselves against the straits or whatever. But this is a bad thing, and it's going to get worse. Believe it. This is not good.
Well, the Louisville shooter today. He was a trans. You know.
Oh, he was.
Nashville,
okay, thank you.
Yeah,
I read two stories on it. Didn't say that.
On his website, it said he used the pronouns and stuff. Okay.
Got it. Okay.
So he was.
He worked at the bank for 2 years. He was some kind of like a loan development somebody. I don't know what. But
yeah.
All right. Another tranny. There you go. All right, keep that in mind, dear friends. These people seem to be heading down the path of real gun violence. No joke.
And here, see, the mayor of Louisville, he kept saying, we've got to do something about gun violence. But you know what? This is the God's honest truth. There is no such thing as gun violence. There is people
violence. It's like saying screwdriver violence or fork violence or spoon violence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to keep my gun under lock and key because I worry so much that it'll come out and shoot me, you know? I mean, that's how ridiculous the concept is. The gun can't do anything.
The good news is 26 states now have constitutional carry. You don't have to even get a permit. 26 states have passed constitutional carry laws. That's good news.
Yeah, actually, everybody's right to bear arms is the Second Amendment to the Constitution. That's your gun permit right there. That's the only gun permit you need is that one.
It's true.
So,
and if you have a good sheriff in your county, even if you're on a blue state, you can have that kind of protection. That sheriff should back you. But now with the trannies wanting guns, this could get to be really funny. I mean, there's something very black humorous about it, blackly humorous.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's some things that they can't control, though. See, like Bud Light put out a tranny on their beer can, and their sales bottomed out. Nobody's buying it. As a matter of fact, a lot of people have decided they'll never buy another Bud Light ever. They say it wasn't that good of a beer in the first place. So,
stock is dropping.
It's easier to give it up. Huh?
Yeah, their stock, Anheuser-Busch stock, is way down. It's down. Bud Light, executive behind the Mulvaney marketing campaign, trashes Bud Light and its customers during an interview. I mean, these people can't keep their stories straight.
She's a very woke person. I can tell the way she's talking. She's very woke.
Yep.
She's not living in reality at all.
No.
You know, this comes from this generation of everybody gets a trophy, like, oh, you thought up this wonderful idea. Well, it could be a harebrained, stupid idea, but you know, we have to value people and value their ideas. So we have to value every stupid idea that comes up. Okay. It's like, can't we have any discernment, any judgment, any rationality? You know, it's like you can have, there's two ways you can focus on doing things in the world. You can be rational or you can be emotional. If you're emotional, it's never going to work out because emotions is not rational. It's not truth. Okay, and you're not acting on reality. You're acting on feelings. And that leads us to where we are today in America.
You got it. Well, all right. Okay, thank you, Mitch. Great job as always, and we will talk soon. You have a good week and a good next week, and we'll be in touch very shortly.
As soon as I get back from Vegas, I'll contact you. Okay.
Mitch is going to take a little trip and have fun. All right. Good job.
Okay.
Good night, Mitch. All right. Thanks to all of you for being here tonight. We're off and staggering another week full of insanity, and we're watching the end of the formerly United States of America. It is being torn to shreds, and it has happened in only a little over 2 years. And right down the block, maybe a mile away, is Obama, Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, living in that mansion, and they are running the freak show in the White House. Back with you tomorrow night. Take care.